Okay, welcome back, everyone. We're going to continue with our reports. We have three reports before we go into the SSC presentation. So, Frank?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Mid-Atlantic Council met in Montauk on April 8th to the 10th, and I wish it's a beautiful place to visit, but I would suggest if anybody wants to go there, they do it off-season and not in-season. Okay. The council discussed golden tilefish measures. They set the specs for 2015 through 2017. The council adopted the golden tilefish measures for 2015 at 1.76 million pounds, roughly 1.8, and they set them for the following year, 16 and 17, at almost 1.9. Recreational issues and catching accounting framework. The council considered changing the recreational possession limit from 8 fish per person per trip to 8 fish per person per day. However, the council did not take action, but they did initiate a framework that could result in a new catch and discard accounting procedures for both commercial and recreational fisheries, and they'll be looking at that at future meetings. SCUP GRA framework. The council received an update on the SCUP gear restricted areas for framework 8. The framework is being used to develop and assess whether the modifications to the current GRAs are needed to improve the effectiveness of reducing SCUP discards. The council also voted to add additional alternatives for analysis into the framework document, and the council also voted to consider as part of the framework an increase to the incidental possession limit for SCUP in order to turn regulatory discards into landings. River herring and shad. The council has a newly formed river herring and shad committee, of which Terry, Mary Beth, and Doug Grout are members of. The committee met to define the define terms of reference for the scope of their work, and the committee is part of the council's proactive coordinating effort to conserve river herring and shad. They developed 5 terms of reference. I'm not going to go into the 5 terms, but you can find them in the report. The only one I will mention, because it came up at the enforcement meeting the other day, and somebody kind of put me on the spot on this one, but consider additional ways to cooperate with the New England Fisheries Management Council on river herring and shad efforts by recommending catch caps interdependently. And that's just one of the 5, and you can see the 5 in their report. Magnus and Stevens, the council, the executive committee met to discuss the council's positions on Magnus and Stevens. They reviewed a survey that was sent out, and once again, the council will be looking at future positions and issues, and the relevant documents and links about that can also be found on the council's webpage. Deep sea corals. The council received an informational update on the progress of the deep sea coral amendment. There was a slideshow, a very informative one actually, on the locations and the different types of corals, and no action was taken on Amendment 16 at this meeting. Standard bycatch reporting methodology, the SBRM Omnibus Amendment, review and approval. The council voted to adopt the amendment as presented, with the same preferred alternatives were selected when the amendment was initially developed in 2006. There were several minor modifications, which can be found in the meeting's details. They received the update, which Jim mentioned a little bit, on butterfish, tilefish, and the northern shrimp. Butterfish and tilefish are both not overfished and overfishing not occurring. The new butterfish success that was passed the peer review. The audience and everybody was grateful because now butterfish can actually be a fishery again from what it used to be as a bycatch fishery. It was also noted it was too bad that Geir Munson was no longer with us because he was very instrumental in making sure that that was looked into. And as Jim said, northern shrimp was another story. Other business, the council had a workshop from BOEM, wind energy, and they also had a listening session from offshore wind in the United Kingdom. The next meeting of the MID will be June 10th in New Jersey, and that's about all I have for now. I'll look at Rick and see if...
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's good to be with you this morning. I appreciate Frank's report, and I will point out that the meeting was very well attended there in Montauk. The BOEM workshop that preceded it on that first morning was standing room only. It was packed with fishermen there from Montauk that were interested in the best management practices and other issues that BOEM was presenting on. So I thought that was a very good engagement. One other thing that occurred that week, we hosted a webinar that Tuesday night for the dogfish AP and dogfish industry. And we were using that to get some more feedback from the industry relative to this issue of the trip limits, because we had had a disconnect between our council and this council and potentially the ASMFC, and recognizing, too, that the ASMFC will be having some discussion about that question at their upcoming meeting. So we had a webinar, and most of the participants supported either a status quo of the trip limit or a slight to modest increase of that. And we forwarded the results of that to the regional office. So that was a helpful discussion to have, just reflecting on some of the different outcomes there. But that's all I have. I would point out that the SCUP-GRA framework that Frank spoke of, and also the Deep Sea Coral Amendment, do have some interactions, because there are spatial designations for protections. One obviously for scup bycatch, the other for deep sea corals. Those are going to have to be looked at some in terms of the timeline of those actions because of that interrelationship. So I'm not sure if those will be on the agenda in August or how that timing is going to be set up, but we'll be reviewing that before that decision is made. Thanks.
Thank you. Question for Frank and or Rick. Terry.
A question for Rick, I guess, because I was on the webinar for dogfish. And I was definitely in the minority there. I personally think that we should take the trip limits off, but evidently 17 other people didn't think that. So, was there any discussion at the mid where we were so different on trip limits of maybe like a, I don't even know if I can say the word without sounding drunk, cumulative trip limit. So if you're out 3 days, you can get 3 days worth of trip limits. Was there any discussion about that, Rick? I was just thinking of that after the discussion on the webinar.
Terry, we had some discussion, but chose not to update our advice to the agency and simply forwarded the results of the webinar to them so they'd have additional background. Thanks.
Any further questions? Okay, moving on to ASMFC. David?
In your binder, you'll find a description of what occurred at our winter meeting. And by the way, our spring meeting is scheduled for, I guess, the third week, May 12 through May 15, for those who are interested. And by the way, at that particular meeting, we will have a workshop dealing with the Magnuson-Stevens reauthorization. The ASMFC will take a look at what's before us now, the House version, the Senate version, and we hope offer up some constructive comments relative to those two dramatically different versions of MSA reauthorization, and I hope offer up something that is useful and different from what's already before us now in those two versions. So I'm looking forward to that workshop. At our meeting, our winter meeting, I'll only mention a few things. As usual, we had discussions about what to do with improved sea herring fishery management, specific to how we deal at the interstate level with protection of spawning sea herring. We did decide to move forward with a new addendum, which will be to take a close look at our spawning area protection in Area 1A, that's the inshore portion of the Gulf of Maine, to determine if we need any changes in the areas themselves and perhaps in the timing as well. So that will be the principal piece of business relative to sea herring. Well, that was the principal of business, and we'll at our spring meeting, we'll revisit this issue when we assume that the addendum will be brought forward, and we'll act on that. Also, back in February, we had a winter flounder board meeting, and we set the recreational measures for 2014. There was an attempt to Make a change in the commercial limits for the Southern New England Mid-Atlantic stock to increase them somewhat in response to stock status information. However, we decided as a board not to do that. We decided to keep it as is, 50 pounds, 38 fish per trip per day. That's the commercial trip limit, possession limit. However, we did decide, once again, in light of the stock status information and at the urging of my colleague to the right, Mark Gibson, who has his ear to the ground on winter flounder science, biology, we did decide to extend the recreational season from the 60-day opportunity that we now have to make it March 1 to December 31st with a two-fish creel limit. So a modest change, a very modest change relative to the recreational fishery. Let's see. We did have a great deal of discussion regarding summer flounder, scuff and black sea bass recreational fishing measures, and never has a recreational fishery occupied so much of my time. Days and days and days. It kind of makes the recreational fishery concerns for codfish and haddock in the Gulf of Maine look like child's play. But it's not, of course. It's extremely important. But still, much time was spent on how to deal with keeping the take of these species, notably summer flounder, keeping it to the recreational harvest limit, the coastwide recreational harvest limit. I won't get into the specifics because this council is not concerned. We're concerned, but that's not a principal concern of ours. NEMAP, there was some discussion about NEMAP, NEMAP being the Northeast Area Monitoring and Assessment Program. The NEMAP board meets every once in a while to discuss the progress of NEMAP, which, of course, is an important survey helping the Northeast Fisheries Science Center supplement the work done by the Bigelow up and down the coast. I think most of us know that the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council research set-aside is used to fund that particular program. NEMAP is struggling to find another funding source, and that work is still underway. We did indicate that the NEMAP board, of which I'm a member, we did indicate that there's continued need for technical committees to take a close look at the NEMAP work, at the data, at the indices of abundance and everything else to make sure that we are doing what we need to do to make sure it's scientifically credible and that the Northeast Fisheries Science Center continues to feel that it is a survey worth continuing to be used in the assessments that they do for the Mid-Atlantic Council as well as the New England Council. And apart from that, I'll end there and just refer you to the summary of our meeting if you care to get any further details about species that might be near and dear to your heart, such as shad and river herrings, sturgeon. There was some spiny dogfish action, American eel. We're a very busy group, and we get all of our business done per species board in about 2 hours to 3 hours, and we accomplish all the work that needs to be done in 2 or 3 hours. It's an amazing feat, I must say. Yeah. That's it, Terry.
Questions for David? It is amazing, isn't it? Okay, our last report is from the Coast Guard and in law enforcement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, I'd like to introduce the Coastie in the crowd for this meeting is Commander and soon-to-be Captain Brian Fiedler. Brian comes to us by way of a Long Island fishing family. He's also in addition to being a Coast Guard Academy graduate, he's a graduate of the University of Rhode Island's Marine Affairs Program, a proud graduate of that program. He's been the CEO of the Fisheries Training Center on Cape Cod, and he's also served on several cutter tours as commanding officer and other senior positions. He's one of the Coast Guard's premier fisheries law enforcement experts, and he is my replacement. So he will be sitting in this chair come June. And hopefully he'll be sporting the four stripes in the shoulder as well. Next slide, please. Good slide up. Come on, Karen. Let's go. Good. You're just happy because I'm not going to hand you this presentation 2 minutes before it goes on. I'm sure Captain Fiedler will do much better and be more timely. Oh, that's okay. I'll just keep going. For enforcement, the reporting period is 1 March through 21 April. During that time, we conducted 188 boardings, issuing 6 fisheries violations, resulting in an observed compliance rate of 96.8. And that's down a little bit from the 99.1 at the last council meeting. Next slide. We had 2 fairly significant suspected or alleged, is that the right term, Joe? I want to make sure we don't prejudice anyone here. Suspected closed area incursions, one was in closed area 1 and one over in closed area 2. I point these out as I do every council meeting because, despite reporting an A in compliance every year, I just want to make sure that everyone understands that the term observed compliance, that is qualified by the term observed, and what I want to make clear to the council members, and I've tried to do that over the past few years, is that there are still people who use net liners, who fashion hidden compartments to hold fish, keep them secret, to manipulate their VMS, to make closed area incursions, and conduct all manner of illegal activities. And I say that because you all need to be mindful that there's a real threat out there to the resource from the small minority of fishing vessel operators that seek to gain an unfair competitive advantage over people playing by the rules. And especially as we move forward to implementing new habitat and research areas, that threat is still out there. And I know Captain Fiedler and his staff will be mindful of that and maintain a vigilant watch. Next slide. Safety, going out on some of the highest compliance numbers we've had, with those 188 boardings, 21 violations issued to 10 vessels, so the compliance rate is up around 95%, which is about 20% higher than when I first got here. I'm glad to see that, and there's a proven correlation between those numbers and safety. Next slide. For search and rescue, we responded to 16 casualties, assisting 28 fishermen, and 0 fatalities, I'm happy to report. Next slide. Part of our fishing vessel and safety program, I've been asked by those folks to relay this message about 8 months ago, we terminated the watch on 2182, the old voice distress frequency of 2 megahertz, and there was during our safety inspection process, the examiners noticed that folks seemed there was a general lack of awareness that we weren't monitoring 2182 anymore. So there are flyers on the table, I know Paul's engaged in outreach, but if you could help spread the word, then boy, hopefully no one's asking for help on 2182. That would be an awful shame, but the frequencies that we are monitoring on DSC are up there, and hopefully the mariners are using other recognized international distress methods as well, like EPIRBS and the like. Next slide. So if you sent me an email over the last few months, you've noticed that I'm moving on, and my duties and responsibilities have changed dramatically. And they mostly focus on getting those 2 little girls in the picture on the bus and making sure they have fun at the beach. The past 5 years has been quite an adventure for me. I'm grateful for all the help and advice I've been given. And as my wife likes to remind me regularly, I need all the help I can get. So I'm certain Captain Fiedler will appreciate the same assistance that I've got. He's going to need it, and he's going to do a great job, I'm sure. That concludes my agency report, Mr. Chairman, and I just would like to say a few other thanks and beg the council's indulgence and offer some parting remarks. And for the record, this is from Pete DeCole, a private citizen and seafood lover. My work on the council has afforded me the opportunity to travel in uniform in many public places. As I've done so, I've been repeatedly thanked for my service. For those of you who are my age or even older, you know that that hasn't always been the case. Today I'd like to thank all of you for your service, for the important work that you do, and it's done by the council. In addition to the council members, it's important to recognize that there are so many others here that play a vital role in the fisheries management process, including council staff, the NOAA regional office, the Fisheries Science Center, especially Dr. Jim, who has to put up with my running commentary every couple of months, and the industry and NGO folks who sit in the crowd and provide their input to the process. Members of the PDTs, APs, SSCs, MAFMC, and all the other ABCDFGs that are out here. I thought the Coast Guard had cornered the market on acronyms, but you guys have just whipped us clean. I'd also like to thank Logan, Joe Heckwolf, and the folks in NOAA Enforcement and the General Counsel. I think we're in a better place now than when I first got on the council back in 2009, and I think it's only getting better, and I would encourage the continued movement forward to a more respectful dialogue with respect to enforcement. I've seen, during my career, I've seen fisheries managed all across the country, different councils, and also different countries around the world. I've yet to see more capable people doing a more difficult job in such a respectful and transparent manner. So for that, I thank you as a private citizen, and I wish you all fair winds and following seas in all your future endeavors, and hopefully our paths will cross again in the future. But thank you all very much.
Well, thank you, two foremost private citizens, Pete. But I do want to remark that Pete's leaving to retire from the Coast Guard after 26 years of service, pretty exemplary. 5 years with us, he's co-chaired our enforcement committee, and importantly, he was coached by Captain Howard at Coast Guard Academy, so something washed through. But we do have a small token of appreciation for you, and I'm going to read it into the record, and it's, "Dear Pete, after 5 years of unflagging service to the New England Council, both its members and staff extend their best wishes on your retirement from the Coast Guard and accordingly from your service as their liaison to this branch of the military. As Chief of the U.S. Coast Guard's Maritime Law Enforcement Branch in the 1st Coast Guard District, you have provided an important link to the Council as well as the fishing community members who involve themselves in the process. We have also had the benefit of your helpful reports and assistance in our VMS Enforcement Committee. Most notably, and with safety at sea as an uppermost concern, you have assisted the Enforcement Committee in addressing the longstanding issues of trawl gear storage during closed area transits. The books have not yet been closed on this issue, but significant progress was made on your watch. We are certain that your ability to develop industry and interagency partnerships and achieve successful results will serve you well in your future. You clearly took Coach Howard's lessons to heart. The Council appreciates all of your efforts and support while it has addressed critical issues that involve the livelihood and well-being of our many stakeholders. As you engage in other endeavors, please know that we are grateful for your service, and many thanks and with very warm regards. So congratulations, Pete.
Get your picture.
I know, I'm looking, I'm trying to. There you go.
I want to take a selfie.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to know why Logan, before he starts, if he could check into whether or not Pete had a permit for digging that hole, and was it an EIS or an EA?
Give him one by. Logan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Logan Gregory, Special Agent Charge, Northeast Division, Office of Law Enforcement for NOAA. I'll give you some brief highlights from our second quarter report. Andrew Zakaris was convicted of money laundering, smuggling, conspiracy to money launder, and conspiracy to smuggle after a week-long jury trial in Bangor, Maine. Jay Conrad of Lakeland, Tennessee, pled guilty in the District of Maine to conspiring to illegally import and traffic narwhal tusks, conspiring to launder money, and illegally trafficking in narwhal tusks. This case involved a narwhal tusk smuggling ring where 400 tusks were smuggled into the U.S. from Canada via hidden compartments and then shipped to U.S. buyers. The case was investigated in conjunction with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Environment Canada. John Price, owner and president of J.P. Shellfish Incorporated, pled guilty in U.S. District Court in Portland, Maine, to 12 felony counts of structuring cash transactions, and to one misdemeanor count of Lacey Act trafficking. The plea resulted from a 15-month investigation, which showed that Price conspired with Robert Thompson, the manager of Sprucehead Fishermen's Co-op, and 13 commercial fishermen, to move nearly 400,000 pounds of unreported American lobster with a value of $1.8 million through a black market. Price is scheduled to be sentenced in May. The five fishermen who profited most from this scheme signed cooperation agreements requiring them to testify against Price and Thompson. The agreement also requires them to file 5 years of amended federal tax returns, including fees and penalties. The remaining eight fishermen are being referred to the IRS for audits. Prior to the plea, Price and Thompson also settled a $1 million private lawsuit filed against them by the co-op. Gordon Perlman, owner of Promark Foods, signed a settlement agreement that included a civil penalty of $5,175. Promark Foods also forfeited $256,809 in proceeds from a seized shipment of an unlawful import of 24,648 pounds of Chilean sea bass. An OLE officer issued an enforcement action report to the owner of a fishing vessel in Plymouth, Mass. For allegedly landing HMS species with tails removed. The Coast Guard issued a similar violation for the similar offense on a different occasion, and both cases are being considered for prosecution. OLE expects to publish a proposed rule in the spring of 2014 with a 45-day public comment period for the purpose of codifying the VMS type approval standards, specifications, procedures, and responsibilities applicable to commercial vendors and or mobile communication service providers. The rule will also specify procedures for type approval renewal and revocation. The Office of Law Enforcement coordinated a compliance assistance education and outreach session in New Bedford, Massachusetts for the limited access scout fleet. Approximately 50 vessel owners and operators were in attendance. The compliance session was conducted by the Office of Law Enforcement and GARFO Sustainable Fisheries Division staff and discussed proposed measures of Framework 25 and Framework 51. Case activity during the second quarter, 22 cases were opened. Six summary settlements were issued totaling $3,620, and 10 cases have been forwarded to the Office of General Counsel Enforcement Section. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Questions for Logan? Tom.
Thanks. I missed this probably in the Coast Guard, but I'd maybe just ask the question of both. Pete brought up net liners, and it's certainly something that we're hearing more about. Could either or both of you comment on what steps we're taking to intercept and find folks who may be using net liners, and what changes, if any, are being made to increase the chance that those people are intercepted?
I was just going to say we're trying to catch them. And as you can imagine, it's not that easy. We have to catch them in the act, and we've met some significant challenges in doing that because we need to sneak up on them.
Right. And I just add there are a couple cases pending. We do continue to get information regarding the use of these, you know, net constrictors and net liners. But like Pete said, it is difficult to catch because they've found ways to quick release these pieces of gear before they are caught by law enforcement. So we're doing what we can, but it is difficult.
Just to follow up, is it your sense, it seems as in conversations that I've had that there's a sense in the fleet that the use of net liners and constrictors is on the increase. Is that your sense, and is there any hard evidence that you have that would represent an increase in that kind of behavior?
It seems I hear more about it. Whether or not that actually means there's more of it going on, I don't know. I would say this, though, that it is important that those that do know about it, those in the industry that do know about it, contact us and give us as much specific information as possible, because that's pretty much how law enforcement works. We act on information, and the more information we can get, the better we can address the issue. So we need as much help from the industry as the industry needs help from us. So
just one last follow-up. Do you ever look at catch patterns, composition of catch patterns to identify, you know, potential problems?
We look at a variety of things, yes.
Ellen?
It's illegal to have small mesh on your vessel at all, so... you know, a netliner is fairly large. There shouldn't be any place that you could hide it. So I'm thinking that, you know, just boarding, short of throwing it over the side, which they couldn't do really quickly, you know, it is illegal, and I haven't personally heard of anybody using them.
I think there's probably, Joe can probably put about five or six different holes in that, you know, one statement. There's a lot of different reasons for having net on board that are legitimate, and they come up with the net, or there's a lot of ways to explain away. Trust me, it may sound foolish, but it's not going to hold up. It's what's going to hold up in a court, not necessarily what passes the red face test.
David.
Yeah, they can also layer the large mesh on top of each other, so it makes the mesh smaller than what it otherwise would be. I just wanted to make a point that in light of these discussions, I'm reminded that we did decrease the minimum sizes for some key groundfish stocks. I expressed at the time some concern that would promote the use of more net liners, and it's almost impossible to catch someone using net liners because fishermen, many, that's the wrong way to put it, a small minority perhaps, are skilled at knowing how to use them and when to use them. And I'll conclude by highlighting the fact that the National Marine Fisheries Service, I think John Buller, did send us a letter not too long ago indicating that he had some concerns, his agency has some concerns, that it appears that there is, I think I'm stating this correctly, that there's more targeting of smaller groundfish. It's not just an unavoidable bycatch, it's more targeting. John can certainly clarify what I just said if it's not correct. So this is a real problem. I think it's a problem that could worsen, and the Coast Guard is in a difficult position, as well as NOAA law enforcement, because unless someone rats the other guy out, you're not going to catch him.
Terry.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with most everybody here. Just because we're catching more small fish doesn't necessarily mean that we're cheating. It may mean there are more small fish around than what we've been catching. I think that we had a problem with net liners a couple of years ago, and we're just hearing about it now, and the guys are aware that people know about it. So we're hearing about it, but that had already come and gone, and I certainly hope that people are paying better attention to the rules and that. And, you know, small fish, we get a lot of small fish out there. We get a lot of small flounders. We get a lot of small haddock. We get a lot of small cod. I mean, all things that, that, you know, if we happen to miss a year class of something coming through and it recruits into the fishery, I mean, that's the reason why we would have small fish. Composition of the catch might be an indication to keep an eye on that guy, but it certainly is. I think if you look overall, we're all catching more small fish because we've missed something, and that's the reason why. I don't know. That's just my take.
Laura.
I would just echo what Terry's saying and just add the financial aspect to there's a tremendous disincentive to land a small fish because they aren't worth as much. If you look at any auction pricing report throughout New England, a small gray sole versus a large gray sole, a small dab versus a large dab, a small haddock versus a market-sized haddock, significant price differences. Furthermore, as a processor, your yields are significantly lower on the smaller fish, plus the labor involved in cooking, in cutting the smaller fish is tremendously more. So I definitely think there is not a drive to go out there and grab a bunch of small fish. And finally, customer demand. The chefs don't want the smaller fish in terms of plate coverage and portion sizes. So I think what Terry's saying is actually makes the most sense is that, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of smaller fish in the ocean, and we're sort of charged with marketing those because that's what we have to catch. But it's not because they want to be catching those. So those are not the fish that are going to cover their fuel and crew costs. Thank you.
Okay. We're running a little bit over our timeline. Are there any further questions before we move on to SSC? There is a time constraint on Jake's part, so we're going to do SSC before lunch. Seeing no further questions, I do want to reiterate the council's thanks and appreciation to both George and Pete for all your service. We really appreciate it. We're going to turbo through SSC, Jake, right?
That's entirely dependent upon you guys, Terry. Thank you for letting me go before lunch. I have to get back for late afternoon baby duty. And then I have Red Sox tickets later tonight, but that's not the constraint. Sorry? The SSC met on March 27th, so almost a month ago in Providence. This is what our agenda looked like. It was a rare agenda in which we had no ABC and OFL setting duties, but we had been stacking up enough requests from council members, council staff, and SSC members to discuss various issues that we finally decided we had enough for a meeting to go through all that. It was a very full agenda. I provided brief reports, and I'm going to try to provide even briefer summaries on four of these items, and those are the ones highlighted up here, which is the discussion of the role of social scientists in SSC process, discussion of fishermen participation in SSC process, review and comment on NOAA's newly proposed stock assessment prioritization process,